each of us have to follow our own path. There are people that would never want to experience plant medicine, and that's fine too, because it's about getting into your heart. And that's what the plants are helping us with, is to get into our heart. So you use whatever portal feels natural to you and whatever calls you. Maybe it's the drum, maybe it's the animals, maybe it is a plant, whatever it may be, that will help you get into that space that you can remember. And that's the power of modern mysticism.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. Several years ago, when a friend was visiting, we decided to go on a pilgrimage to a local indigenous landmark called Guide Rock. It is a hill in south central Nebraska where, according to traditional Pawnee religion, it was one of five dwelling places of spirit animals with miraculous magical powers. My friend was a dowser and felt the land calling her to do some healing from the Sioux-Pawnee conflicts that pursued in the Republican Valley. I was intrigued by the legend of the spirit animals and their miraculous powers. What pursued was a definitive shift in my relationship with nature. We arrived and immediately chose to climb to the top of the wooded hill. The beautiful canopy of trees made for a very magical portal. Rocks, plants, and trees enveloped a stream that passed through down below. Looking over the steep cliff was exhilarating and life-affirming. It was a beautiful, beautiful spot. My friend stayed and began working with her dowsing rods, and I saw a rabbit trying to get my attention off to the left. And because I was interested in the magical spirit animals, I decided to follow it. It weaved in and out of the cliff and then wound down into a valley with mostly overgrown plants and prairie grasses. Dormant in the fall climate, it was all brown and kind of boring. When it finally disappeared, the rabbit that is, I heard a voice say, "Take a picture." Like I said, the landscape was not particularly beautiful with all the brown, tall grasses. So at first I ignored the voice. Again, I heard, "Take a picture." So I reached for my cell phone and began snapping photos of what was in front of me. Not much of anything was in the frame. A few minutes later, a hawk flew from my left to my right and landed in the tree. Distracted by my curiosity, my attention left the photos and followed the hawk. A few minutes later, my friend came down and said with a sense of urgency, "Did you see that?" She had an experience with a very large flying animal that she described as pterodactyl-like. I didn't see it. She said it swooped by her head and made a big impact. Later, back home, I remembered the voice asking me to take a picture. I got out my phone and looked at the images. To my surprise, there were two distinct entities in the photos. One was a very large green-white orb, not the kind when the sun reflects off the lens. It was much larger and beaming with energy. The other was a bright teal-blue energy that was shaped like a flying fairy in a child's book, wings and all. I was astounded. I didn't expect this surprise. I began showing everyone the photos. 2 weeks later, I was in a specialty store looking for a Halloween costume when I came across a statue of a fairy with the exact same coloring and shape as the image in the photo, right down to the very precise shape of the wings. She was calling me. I couldn't see her, but she could definitely see me. The statue now stands in my sacred space, reminding me of that magical day and the unseen realms of nature that are here to work and play with us. What do these kind of stories tell us about our potential? What do they tell us about humanity's future? We're going to explore this question with a nature wisdom keeper and a plant photobiologist who are both very, very connected to nature. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness into your heart, relax, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness as we introduce our guests. First, my co-host, Dr. Paul Mills, is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He has over 400 scientific publications in the fields of pharmacology, oncology, cardiology, psychoneuroimmunology, behavioral medicine, and integrative health. He's the author of the book Science, Being and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Julie. Great to see you again. And Rajan, it's great to see you. And Anna Maria, I'm looking forward to our conversation together. I want to introduce our guest, Dr. Rajneesh Khanna. He's a biotechnology consultant and plant and soil health scientist, applying multidisciplinary approaches for research and development. He's also the founder of Terra Local application, which I think we'll get into discussing, as well as the company iCultivir, which I know a bit more about. But also, I had the great fortune of interviewing Rajneesh for my book, Science, Being, Becoming, that you just mentioned, Julie. And there's some just such insightful stories in our interview, Rajneesh, that's so relevant to our interview today that I'm looking forward to us speaking about.
Beautiful. And Ana Marie Vasquez is the author of the best-selling book, Nature, Divine Experiences with Trees, Plants, Stones, and Landscapes, a book in the Common Sentience series. She has a profound connection with nature and animals. As a multi-sensory animal and nature intuitive, she specializes in working with them and helping others understand and interpret messages coming from them. Anna Marie sees nature and animals as mirrors to our inner landscapes that support us in making shifts that we otherwise wouldn't make on our own. As a shamanic practitioner and certified intuitive strategist, Anna Marie also helps others unpack their intuitive backpacks and utilize these gifts in their lives. She serves on the faculty of the Academy for the Soul. Welcome, Anna Marie.
Oh my goodness. I am so excited to have this conversation. That space where science and spirituality intersect, that's the corner that I love hanging out on.
Good. So well, we are poised for that with both of you, esteemed guests. We're so happy to have both of you here. And we've had a traditional first question on this show for 9.5 years. This Main Street Mystic series is a part of the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. And Anna Marie, in your book, you talk about all things being connected in many different ways. And I sense that you'll share more about that throughout our conversation today. So I'm going to turn to you, Rajneesh. And I'm curious from your perspective, as a plant photobiologist. I love this idea. I think plant biologist. And I have to say, oh, plant photobiologist. So I can't wait to learn more about that because I know it's going to come through. And your life experiences, what does all things connected mean to you? And maybe you could share with our listeners your own personal story with a communion or communication with nature and how that's impacted your life and work.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be on the show. And I'm also excited about thinking about this boundary between science and spirituality. I would start by saying, as a scientist, and Paul, who I've also known for a while, as a very successful scientist, I think in the mainstream of science, there are curtains that are drawn that block the spirituality part. And those curtains actually narrow our vision. We only want to think about things that are measurable. And so going back to your question, we can only measure so many things. But how things are connected sometimes is not measurable. So those things that are not measurable, our systems are way more advanced than what we know about them. So we can experience them. We can feel things, how they're connected. We may not be able to measure them. That's how I would like to say that in terms of my experience. And my interest is in understanding, maybe we'll never be able to measure some things. And my experience has been such that that is going to be true. But we will be able to experience everything. So to be able to do science with the ability to experience and not just the ability to measure is what I like to move forward towards. Mm.
I got to follow up on that because that reminds me this question of how are all things connected? And Ana Maria, you note in the beginning of your book that we are all wired energetically, as your words, to be able to connect with all the different domains and dimensions of the natural world of Mother Earth herself. And Rajneesh, in the book when I interviewed you, you shared with me an experience you had in the natural kingdom and the plant kingdom that essentially completely changed your vision. Then you knew the connectedness of all things. You knew essentially the oneness of all things. And you told me then going forward, your scientific work radically changed. It was always then this new perspective going forward. Essentially, as you said, a living conscious universe that was your very self. Can you share a bit about that? Some more insight, please. And we'll keep our conversation going.
Sure. I'll be happy to. I didn't know this might take a little bit of a time, but I also followed it up just recently. A few weeks ago, I went back to Brazil where I had the initial experience at a different location. But I've been going back also to do research. So I was participating in ceremonies with ayahuasca, which is plant medicine, and it is very ancient practice. It's been around for a long time, and I've been interested in from two angles. One is from the plant side. Why do plants produce medicine like that? And then secondly, what does it do and how does it do it? We may get into that later on that aspect, but to share the experience that Paul brought up, the first time around, my experience was, I was a little bit nervous because my other cohorts, they had done it before and some have had different experiences. And so I was a little bit nervous about it. But the first thing that came up was I felt another voice, you know, how we have a voice inside us. So I felt like there was another voice which sounded just like mine. And I'm fully awake. I know what's going on around me. This is not hallucinogenic experience. I think it's misclassified. It was not a hallucinogenic experience at all. I was completely aware of everything. It was just that something opened up inside me that was asking me questions and helping me solve some problems that I've had and some that I didn't even know I had. So the voice appeared and it said, would you like visions? Because I was nervous about visions. Or do you want to chat? And I thought, well, I want to chat. Don't want visions right now. So then I said, well, sir, let's chat. Thank you for letting me in. I said, you're welcome. And I said, so who are you? And it said, oh, we'll have to talk about this over next few sessions. So I won't get into all of the details, but essentially that first experience revealed to me that there was something that was inside me that was able to address every single issue that I've had from childhood and talk to me about what I did wrong and in such clarity that it was so clear how I should have acted, what I should have done, and without any terror, without any, you know, there are some things when you do bad things, sure, you know, you feel remorse, you feel all that, but that is the explanation. So it's like the shamans call it, is the plant therapist, is the plant doctor. And that was the first experience. And it did reveal to me the biggest revelation that time was, I asked, so who are you? So let me show you. All of a sudden, I felt like I was sitting, you know, like one of those Greek statues, very large, strong, sitting straight upright. And I feel like this little thing floating. And I looked down there and it was Earth. I could pick it up, zoom in, and look at little things, flowers, you know, everything. And this is not like it's not a hallucinogenic experience. I'm completely aware. This is just something that's coming into me. You know how when you're almost awake, but you're not awake, you're in between dream state. It was kind of like that. And I'm aware of what's going on. And I didn't want it to stop. I wanted to continue. And so I felt then I looked up and there were other people like me, just like me, big people walking around. So after that experience, COVID happened. That was 2019. So recently I had a chance to go back, and that just completely added so much to it, Paul, and we haven't talked about it. So I'll keep it short. So there were three ceremonies again. And the first one, I was less concerned about it after my first round a few years ago. But the first one came up as, okay, you know that everything is one. I am you. You are me. And repeatedly, I wanted to say, I am. And it was just that there is nothing else. Only I am. And that just was so strong. I mean, it still sends shivers in my body because there was an experience of everything is me. There is nothing else. So I said, what was before you? I said, it was I am. And it is I am. There was nothing before, there's nothing after, it's just I am. I just basked in that feeling. That whole experience was just completely amazing. Second time, so I was like, okay, that was so amazing. What can be better than that? Second time, I will show you who I am. This was at a beach. So there was these waves coming in. I don't know what happened. The music, they were playing... So this was with the group Uava Navas in the Amazon, and they were playing their own Uava Nava music. And each musical, you know, anything that was going to happen, I could feel it first. And I couldn't stop. I was just standing up, dancing, and even when we were sitting down, there were like about 40 people. And later on, they told me that, I don't know what you were hearing, but we weren't hearing what you were hearing. Because it was just so amazing. It was like I was the happiest person on the planet. I could feel the waves before they hit. I knew somehow a few seconds before what was going to happen. It was being connected to everything. So then I thought, well, now it can't get better than this. So the third time was completely amazing, even better. So third time, we were on a hammock, and this feeling came up. Again, of I am, and said, so like, I am you, you are me. Every single person is me. I am. You are every single person. When you have a child in your hand, it's you looking back at you. So who are you going to be to your child? You're going back, you being yourself to you. So how you are connected is I am. And so I felt, I mean, this was just conversation, but then it became more of a feeling. I felt something in me like step out. Literally just, you know, step out, stand up, and say, let me show you what it is to when I am a horse. So then I felt like I'm a horse. I'm looking straight down, and all I want to do is just go straight forward, gallop, and just do what I need to do. Something comes in my head. I can feel the paw, you know, the feet, a bird. It started raining. I could feel raindrops. It's like I am also the raindrops. Mm-hmm. It just became, it's very hard to describe. It was an experience that the only way to know this is to experience it. Then I said, so what happens when I die? So then I felt like a dead body laying down. And it said, look, I just step out. And then there is like a sperm and an egg. And you can see, look, this is I am, this is me, and now this is me, and now I start again. It was just, sorry, I took a long time, but this was an experience that I cannot even put into words. All I can do is talk about it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rajnish. We wrote it with you the whole way.
Yeah. For those that are listening on podcast mode, can't see the video, and we are in this room and all of us are shaking our head and smiling so big. And Anna Maria, I'm thinking about you because you write about nature and the divine intelligence and how this converges. But what's like right here in front of me right now that I just want to introduce, Rajnish, that was beautiful and incredible. And from your experiences being plant-based induced, so plant medicine induced. And I talked about a spontaneous experience, even though I kind of set it up like, ooh, this is supposed to be a magical place. And I followed that, but mine was more spontaneous. And a lot of our guests have spontaneous experiences. And Anna Marie, one of the things I noticed in the book was that you were coached and taught how to connect with nature and animals. It was part of your process. Like, I want to do this. I want to do this. And now they want me to sit with a tree for a month. Like, seriously, like, is this going to work? So I think that I just want to throw this out as a conversation piece, because I think it's important that, you know, some of us have these spontaneous, some are not instinctive or spontaneous. Some are plant-based induced, plant medicine, but all of these kinds of experiences, they come in so many different shapes and sizes. And Anna Marie, it would be nice for you to kind of share that you knew as a young child you wanted to do this work, but those skills weren't right there in front of you. I'm curious about your story and how the practice led to the amazing gifts that you have now.
Well, first, Rajneesh, your story, it always is such a gift to be able to hear somebody's experience. And it felt so fantastic on my end. I mean, like, I was feeling it with you. I was welling up with tears at different points of that connected feeling. And I have had that very similar experience in my own way, both plant assisted and not plant assisted, right? Where there are things shamanically with sound that we can do that gets the brain that our ancient ancestors knew about this stuff before, you know, we had the science to back it up. So there's something about when a person of science is able to have that experience. And again, you got to drop all your measurement tools. You got to put everything down and just share what it was. But when it happens in these different realms, it's so fantastic. And, you know, I feel like everything in our lives is so perfect, even when it is imperfect. And I was brought up in a family that there was a lot of chaos that went on in it. And so I learned from a young age to read energy, right? Like, you have to know what a footstep sounds like. You know, are they in a good mood? Or are they in a bad mood? How did the door close or slam? Or you start to feel in at a very young age to energy. So already kind of setting me up for that and knowing when the feces hit the fan to go outside, right? Go to a tree, go be with the animals, get to a space where you can connect. And my half of my family is from Guatemala and the other half is from the United States. But that part that came from Guatemala, there had been, you know, like all over the world, this suppression of the indigenous wisdom in favor of trying to assimilate to a new country, right? It's hard enough to not really speak the language or have an accent when you're speaking the language with people who are going to judge that. But then to say that, you know, your kids are sick and you're giving them, you know, different things other than what the doctor would prescribe, you start to suppress those pieces. And it's been an interesting journey from remembering the connection that my family had when I was really young to through their assimilation. And then now, you know, having my grandmother call me and say, sweetie, you know, what plants can I use to help me come back into balance with this, that, or the other thing? And that piece about unity consciousness is really what that story was about that Rajneesh was experiencing. And that unity consciousness, it's everywhere. And each of us have to follow our own path. There are people that would never want to experience plant medicine. And that's fine too, because it's about getting into your heart. And that's what the plants are helping us with, is to get into our heart. So you use whatever portal feels natural to you and whatever calls you. Maybe it's the drum. Maybe it's the animals. Maybe it is a plant. Whatever it may be, that will help you get into that space that you can remember. And that's the power of modern mysticism, to help us return, even in the face and even in the immersion of all the technology, to know that all of that's a pale comparison to what this human body and this energy field that we are can do, can perceive, can experience, and can even collaborate with. So I get so jazzed up by these conversations.
Well, I want to get back to that notion you mentioned earlier, that we're all energetically wired, that the natural world, everywhere in the natural world, are gifts for us if we just turn our attention to it and focus and allow that opening. Along those lines, in your book, you mentioned trees and your work with trees, and that there are specific species of trees that could provide support that we need. You mentioned the larch tree helps us release things that are not needed, or the fir tree to provide the energetic gift of seeing above and beyond. Anna Maria, will you share with us an example or two of experiences you've had with the wisdom of trees and how they've helped you in your life at a particular time?
Well, it's a full spectrum, and for everyone, right? We're all wired. We may not remember how to utilize all of our abilities, but if we just lean in. So I've had experiences from very subtle to like ridiculously profound. And the one that comes to mind, I had this experience, you know, the life tsunami where the rug is seemingly pulled out from under you, right? In the span of 18 months, I lost my primary relationship. One of my soul dogs died. I lost my job. I lost my home and my land that I was living on, and I had to start over. And so I'm sitting, I you know, now in hindsight, I like to picture myself sitting on the pile of ashes that was my life and going, huh, what am I going to do now? And I knew I didn't want to do it again the same way. I thought, you know what? I did what I was supposed to do. I did what everyone told me to do, and this is where I am. And so if I'm going to do it again, I want to be really connected. I really want to know. And I took time, and I call it my living laboratory. I took everything, all those spiritual platitudes, you know, all the different universal principles. I took that into my living laboratory to see, is it real? Is it repeatable, right? Is it something that works, or is it just a bunch of hokum designed to make us feel better till we eventually just die, right? And I want to know, right? Because if that's what it is, then I can get a different mindset. That's great. But if there's magic afoot that I'm just not tapped into, I want to know that too. And so my most profound experience was I had a teacher tell me, I want you to go out and put your hands on a tree. Pick one tree for 30 days. Go out, put your hands on the tree and talk to the tree. And I seriously, right? Like my human mind was like, my teacher doesn't know what to do with me. This is like busy work while she figures out what she's going to do to prove to this skeptic that there's other stuff going on. So I went out and I put my hands on this tree and I got real nervous and I felt uncomfortable, even like, I don't know if I'm even, is this appropriate? Like, I don't know. And if someone were to walk up, I don't know what I would say to them about what I was doing. So I got real honest with the tree and I said, you know what? Somebody I trust a lot said that this will work to help me learn how to communicate with animals. And so I'm going to do it. But I have a lot of skepticism and my mind has a lot to say about this. So if you can help, great. And so for about 3 weeks, that's pretty much what happened, right? Like I just would go out and feel stupid and touch the tree and tell it what was going on and what I thought about it. And nothing really happened, right? Like not even hallucinations, like not even imaginings, nothing, just radio silence. And somewhere in that last week, I was inside my home and I asked a question out loud. I don't even remember anymore what it was. And I heard an audible response that was not my voice. And I heard it inside, but it felt like it was coming from outside. So I stood up and I looked out the window and it felt like it was coming from the tree. And I said, is that you? And I honestly, right at this point, I thought, oh, I'm having a mental break, right? Like, okay, this is how this is. All right, well, I'm connected to resources and I know how to get help, but let me just see what this tree has to say. So the tree said, yes. And I'm like, I don't even know how that's possible. And then before I could stop myself or censor myself, I said something that is the most embarrassing thing to me now in hindsight, considering what I do for a living. And I said, you know, I don't want to sound ungrateful, but I asked to talk to animals and I don't know what to do with a talking tree. And I got a chuckle from the tree too, right? Like the tree just chuckled at me and said, this is part of a process. You're recalibrating. And this is just part of the journey. The animals will come. And she was right. They came in spades. So it's one of those pieces where I was able to then ask the question trees and get verification from other places and double checked my own mental stability and all of that. And everything came out good. And it turned out that I could trust this tree. And then the tree began to introduce me to other trees. And then the animals showed up. So you can have some pretty wacky experiences that did not involve any other plant medicine.
Yeah, that's a good story. Thank you, Anna Marie. And just listening to you both, I have this awareness, like my experience that I shared didn't turn me into a fairy fan. Like I didn't become, oh, all about fairies and have a fairy garden. It didn't have anything. I don't even know if I believe in fairies, right? But it opened me to a new sense of communion and a new sense of communication with the unseen realms of nature. It expanded my interaction. I've been a mystic and a psychic from a young age as a child, but as an adult, it was like, don't forget earth and nature. Don't forget the elements. Don't forget. So that's what happened to me. And I'm wondering with either of you, if you want to jump in here, as I'm thinking about how do we help our listeners move from admiring the beauty of nature to becoming co-evolutionary partners or co-conspirators with nature itself. Like you were talking, Anna Marie, of it being a part of a process and a recalibration. That's kind of what that experience was for me. It was like, oh, now a new trajectory to add some more tools into my toolbox. So how do we help our listeners? And I really want to go into the science and the photobiology. I want to go there. But first, let's go to how do we help our listeners develop that intimacy, that communication, that relationship, whatever that is, so that it becomes an embodied part of our daily life?
Well, there's a couple things. The first thing is that having the plant-assisted medicine experience gives you a visceral point. It gives you an anchor, right? Like there's nothing wrong with it. It points out, and even all the gurus have said, that's fine. You just don't want to become dependent on that as your only path there, because there's other ways. And once those connections are made because of the plant medicine, you open up to other possibilities. There are so many stories of folks who've only worked with plant medicine once and continue to have expansive mystic experiences. So we don't want to shame anyone in any way, because every path is valid. And one of the things that I teach the folks that work with me is called your intuitive development cycle. Because it's not a switch, right? And it's not linear, like it's off here and it's on there. Of course, exactly like everything in nature, it's a cycle. So you move from not having any awareness about your abilities or that you would even have any abilities, and it moves into where maybe you're just, oh my goodness, I can feel this energy of this living being in this tree or in this animal. And you move along that cycle to where it shifts. And at some point, you begin to feel some energy coming back to you, not just your appreciation and your gratitude, but you start to feel it coming back. And in my book, there's several stories where people talk about that. Oh my goodness, I felt this tree sending me love, or I felt this river sending me love. And it moves from that where it's very one way, either coming from you or coming from the tree or the rock or whatever it may be. And then it moves into a two-way communication. And then what will happen as you up-level and as you expand, you may go into radio silence again. I get a lot of people coming to me going, I think I broke it. It doesn't work the same way anymore. And I had that experience as well. And it's not a breakage. It's an expansion. And when you're in that hallway, it can feel dark. I think about snake, right? When it sheds its skin, its vision gets cloudy, but it's part of its expansion. And then we step into that next piece of understanding. So I would say the first piece is to just lean into whatever feels best for you, whether it is being out in nature, whether it is, you know, leaning into the possibility of angels or whatever. follow your own incline and it will expand. It's like a muscle. The more you do it, the more that it happens. And some of it is spontaneous and there's nothing you can do to precipitate that. But there are well-worn paths that we can create that spark that connection.
I may add something here, and I'll go back to something that I've shared with Paul before. As a scientist, I can't help myself. I have to evaluate, I have to study and understand what is this experience. And as a photobiologist, at least in my heart, I'm almost certain that I know what is going on, but it's not something I can write up. I've tried writing my manuscripts, but because, again, there's no measurement. So I'm thinking of writing a book on this. So I'll tell you briefly what it is, and I've shared it with Paul. I call it the theory of spatial relativity. Einstein's was special relativity, but I think one of the pieces that is missing is space. So I call it spatial, S-P-A-T-I-A-L. And I think that makes sense to me, and I hope I can add to what Anna Maria said, because what Anna Maria is telling you is your experience as if you're in a movie and all the characters are around you. You're immersed in the movie. One of the ways to think about it is, what is consciousness? Who is in control of this movie? Who's the director? That's what I would like to talk about as a scientist. How do we get to that director? And it became very clear to me. And maybe because the reason was that I have dealt with photobiology. And photobiology is how plants respond to light, photobiology. And what I know about photobiology is actually amazing. The greatest magic on this planet is light, water, and air. So you take light, you take water, 6 molecules of water and 6 molecules of carbon dioxide, and plants turn that into sugar. Isn't that a big magic? You take light, water, air, and turn that into something you can eat. I think that process of photosynthesis is the answer to consciousness. Just like photosynthesis is a process, it utilizes light energy, and it brings in air and water and turns it into a mass that then has life. It has a lifespan. Light photons don't have a lifespan. Photons don't die. Photons live eons and eons beyond anyone. We look at photons to see how big our galaxies, farthest galaxies, how big our universe is. So energy has the ability to convert its form, provide or incentivize two types of matter to come and act totally differently. Not just that, plants, when they see light, they change their growth patterns. They are looking for different colors, intensity. Light carries information. It carries information about color, direction, duration, intensity, and plants can understand all of that and respond to it. So if photosynthesis is a process, then why isn't consciousness a process? So early on, when plants and animals went into different directions through evolution, we know that mitochondria occurred in the cell before this distinction happened, because both plants and animals have mitochondria. But chlorophyll or chloroplasts came into plants after the branching. So plants excelled in photosynthesis. And if they had not, we wouldn't be alive, because that process I described not only provides all the food, it provides all the gasoline, everything, right? All the energy is there other than solar energy. So plants are really masters of energy and providing energy to everything. So if consciousness is a process, then we know who the director is. Because if consciousness is a process, that means it is our process where we, some parts of us, are interacting with some information that's outside. Just like how plants, chloroplasts, are interacting with information that's outside, which is light. They're dependent on that information. Similarly, we are dependent on that information. However, each plant will do photosynthesis differently. They'll take the same information, same package, process it differently. That depends on plant's genetic material, memory, environment, location, everything. Same thing with us. The information is the same. How we process it is different. So our memories, our genetics, everything is our tools. But the consciousness is, I think, I use that word as a process. What is out there, I think, is information. And that information is more aware than we are aware. So this is how I think of this as a science question. And the meaning of spatial relativity is simply then, what is this information and how does it play out? So if you walk into a dark forest and you have a flashlight, you turn the flashlight on, the only reason you can walk into a lit forest is because photons travel way faster than you can. If photons were traveling slower than you, you will never walk into a lit forest. The photons in 1 second can go really far. That's the fastest known speed in the universe. So as soon as you turn the flashlight on, let's say in California, in 1 second, there's a tree that has a bright light spot somewhere far on the East Coast. Here I am, and I am just now walking into this light. So if there is information, that photon experienced a lot more information in 1 second. I experienced relatively insignificant information in that 1 second. And I process it. I also filter it and process it. So spatial relativity means that in the realm of consciousness, how we experience information around our space is relatively different based on which organism you are, where you are, whether you're a cell, whether you're a plant, whether you're an animal, whether you're a human. So that, I think, to me, because the experience that I had told me that I am, is that information. This is one thing. And that I am you, but I'm in you to experience your life. My experience is about everything, but I am here in this balloon of this body to have an experience of this life. And it is scientific because I need to control everything. I need to understand everything to keep myself healthy. But mentally, if I forget that, if I get too lost into just being in the movie and forgetting who the director is, then it can become a bit difficult because then there's drama, there's comedy, there's all of that stuff.
So a couple things. Thank you for that. You're an admirer of plants. Your enthusiasm for plants comes straight out as you speak, and that's why you got into the field you did so many years ago. One of the things I remember you said to me is that you were sad that so many people have what you called plant blindness, which means you walk around the world since you've been a young person just loving and admiring plants and seeking to understand them. And now you've advanced it so far with the consciousness piece and all the specialness of plants and how they've given our lives. So just thank you for that. I also wanted to get into elementals if we're going to have time for that. Julie, do we have time for a few words on the elemental kingdom?
Yeah, we do. We do. I just want to ask a quick question before we shift to elementals, Paul, then, because I'm like intrigued by this theory, Rajnish. Thank you. That was like, I have often had this vision of light and information with consciousness. And a lot of what you're saying really is resonant with like Jude Curvin's work and the cosmic hologram and some of what she's pulled together there. But I've often seen this, I've often been intrigued by photosynthesis. Like, are we really having a photosynthesis type of experience as humans and we don't know it? And, you know, I'm a sun lover. I love the sun. I love the light. And so I often like to just kind of have an imagination about that. But I'm wondering if you would, am I crazy and way out in left field? Or is there some kind of relationship with our consciousness and information as light? I see it as a unified field. And when we clear out all of our congestion and emotional baggage and things, we have more of a clarity of receiving and interacting with that information all the time. So I'm just curious if you'd have a human photosynthesis type of response to that.
Well, I'll give the answer that will lead us to elements. How's that? And I'll keep it short. So I think you're absolutely right. And there is not enough time to go too deep into it, but we are actually doing experiments to study what you just said. And what we have discovered is that if you know dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which is in ayahuasca, LSD, all these things are DMTs. DMT is made in plant, and us and humans and animals and plants everywhere. So what it appears to be is that DMT is made from tryptophan, and tryptophan is an amino acid, and tryptophan is converted to serotonin and melatonin or melanin in our brains at night. And in plants, tryptophan is the pathway to make auxin. So all the dark adaptation, so when we go to sleep, the DMT tryptophan pathway is active in plants, in animals, in everything. When light comes on, it shuts down that pathway. It inhibits that pathway. So what I'm talking about is that during evolution on the planet, because there's light and dark, day and night, there are two separate systems biochemically that are operating. One is activated by light. One is the housekeeping, which is always on. And so light is the energy that is providing, that gives us energy and helps make ATP from food. And all of this comes from light. But the housekeeping biochemistry is that other pathway. So I think spirituality is the balance of increasing that dark pathway a little bit to be more in control of the what's going on in light. Because what's happened is that we live in light, we sleep in the dark. So the more we start to balance, and that balance goes to the elements. Because to get that balance, we have to pay attention to what we are made of. Water, air, fire, earth, and then the space that we talked about. So I think you're right. There is a role of light, but the role of light is for us to get up and do something. But then there is other part of our chemistry that we need to pay more attention to what we are doing, why we are doing it, and who we are doing it for.
Thank you. Paul, I'm going to turn it over to you. Excited to see where you want to take this.
Well, the elements and then the elementals. And Ana Maria, you have a section in your book on elementals. I've had encounters with elementals at different points of my life. And my question has to do with, let's say when you're speaking to your tree, or Rajneesh, you're having an encounter with the ayahuasca plant, the being of the ayahuasca plant. Is that an elemental, one of the elementals, some manifestation of the gnome or the Deva consciousness? Is it the entity itself, is the plant or the tree? I'm just not clear on that, how the elementals interact with us as humans when we're encountering the world of nature.
That is a fabulous question. And it's one that a lot of people talk about, and on like a philosophical level, even the easiest, quickest way that I can explain it. So, you know, we, as a human being, in the human part of us, there's this, and then we have different allies, right? Some people might call them guardian angels, or, you know, just these other unseen allies. So it's really a question of discernment. When I connect, for me, the way that I'm wired, I am typically connecting with that tree as a being itself. But you're absolutely right. There's also elementals who I would say are unseen allies of that tree. And they have very serious jobs, you know, in terms of working with and assisting that tree in its growth, in its processes. And it is supporting that in the in-between realms, not necessarily from the biological standpoint, but they are influencing that. So there's different levels. And what I've learned is each of us are wired in different ways. So I can go out with one of my friends and I'm going to connect with that tree as a being, while my friend who's connected to the elementals is going to see the elementals first. She may even see a particular spirit of a tree that is there assisting that tree. She may see some of the fairies, as people might see, or the gnomes that are working under the tree and in the ground or even around the tree. So each person is going to have their natural propensities. And then we can develop any of these areas that, you know, light us up that we're curious about. Does that help explain that a little bit?
Thank you for that answer, Anna Maria. It was perfect. It gave me insight into some things I've been wondering about from my own experiences and others. So that was right on.
So I would like to take us out of the Earth's atmosphere. And we are up out there. We're looking down. And we see like a cloud and everything on the planet. Everything living is down there. Now, if you look on the under the ocean, we'll say, well, look, all these fish, the water is connecting them all. But the fish there in the ocean will not think that. They say, well, I am going to get this food. They're living their own life. So what you're talking about elemental, I think, is also this play. It is all, everything is connected. We just happen to accumulate a certain space and have a form. And this form is part of the space that we are in. We are submerged in water. So the elementals, these fairies or these things that we talk about, I think this is also part of, like you're describing, Anna Maria, you know, part of this force that's helping us or guiding us or telling all the different things to do certain things or be certain way. And paying more attention to that is important. And going back to the ayahuasca, yes, I think that also plays a role. I think ayahuasca is kind of like an elemental because it carries, it is a chemistry. What it's doing is it's going and influencing, changing how my brain at that moment is operating. And it's activating some different parts of the brain than I normally wouldn't. But like Anna Maria was saying, those parts of the brain can be activated by sound, by meditation, by many other means. You don't have to go to plant medicine. But yes, so I think we are all agreeing with how we think.
Rajneesh, I'm wondering if these experiences have created more intimacy between you and the plants. Your connection, your communication. I'm like wondering how it's shifted you as a plant photobiologist.
So that's the transition that Paul described in his book, and he wrote it really well, and I enjoyed actually reading it myself. What happened was before then, I viewed plants as model systems, you know, like most biologists use. We use Drosophila, we use this and that. I'm just doing my biology. I'm going to build my career and answer all these wonderful questions and publish. After this experience, I don't look at anything the same way. Plants are not my subjects. They're my collaborators. Yes. They're helping me understand what I need to know. They're yes. working with me. I'm not working on them. That switch completely changed how I do my experiments, how I think, how I handle plants, and everything. So yes, it did change.
Beautiful.
But just off of what he said, that is like, that sums up the work that I do. We're shifting from doing things to the animals in nature to being in collaboration with them. Because when we've got all of those voices at the table, imagine the revelations we'll have. Imagine the things that we're going to learn.
Well, you both are answering our question here. So I'm going to just pose it to you directly. Because what do you think these experiences tell us about humanity's potential and our future? Anybody want to jump in? What are these experiences telling us about our human potential and humanity's future?
Well, maybe I'll say quickly because I one of the things, then maybe Anna Maria can join in. So one of the things that I had a question when I went this time was to how can I help the planet? Because we hear all these problems about deforestation and all this going on. I've been personally very concerned about what we are doing and how can we improve our future. And the answer was very clear to me. Again, it was, I posed this question, how can I spend the rest of my life to do something that can help the planet and improve people's lives? And I said, who do you think you are? the planet, I am the planet. What you need to worry about is exactly what you just said, that you're doing everything to save the planet and help everyone else. How the planet don't worry about the planet. Planet existed before you came here and will exist after you will be gone. There is nothing that I cannot do. But what you do is for you, and I am you. So what experience am I having in you? Think about that. If you do what I will do, you will know the answer already.
Beautiful.
So I think if more people become aware of I am and they're connected, then this question becomes easier to answer, that everyone needs to just accept all the resources and wonderful gifts and not try to just take everything. You know, in kindergartens, we go and try to teach our children, don't take all the candy. But we forget that.
Rajneesh, I just want to say this before I point to Anna Marie here to answer that question. The thing that I really appreciate about you in this conversation today and just getting to be with you is that you've, as a scientist, you've taken these non-ordinary experiences with the plant medicine and you've really fully embodied it. Like, you're really embodying it in your expression as the I am, as life itself. It's not, you are unitive consciousness. You're not looking out there to say, how do we get back there again? How do I be a part of this? You're really embodying unitive consciousness as an expression. So I really thank you for that and just really appreciate that.
It's something that has emerged from my experiences and understanding of my experiences. So it's not like I don't feel like, oh, yay me. It's not that. I feel frustrated in a way that I hope more people feel that way. That's what we need to do. That's why I'm here, to share my experience.
Beautiful. Anna Marie, what do these experiences tell us about humanity and our future potential?
Well, I think that all of the natural world is leaning in because they've been waiting for us to remember. And as each of us individually remember, right? Like, go outside, just go outside, no agenda, just go out there for a minute, let nature do its magic. And when you have those experiences, right, whether subtle or profound, you begin to have a realization that there's more going on than meets the eye. And when we shift from having nature as this beautiful backdrop to the unity consciousness, we start to live differently on the earth. We start to make different decisions on how we move through the earth, right? Like, you're not going to do something that hurts your friends, that hurts your family. And the more that we learn that we are all family, the different we begin to behave. And so I feel like this is an exciting choice point that we're at. And again, nothing is being asked of us in the doingness, but to remember who we be.
Paul, I'm going to turn to you if you have any last closing remarks before we close this delightful conversation today.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. I do. And I've just so enjoyed this dialogue going from science into the mystical and back to science and it's how it's evolving and basically co-joining ultimately and supporting us. I want to conclude by, for your question, Julie, asking how people can more get in touch in different exercises. And you mentioned this a little bit, Anna Marie, but I want to recommend Anna Marie's book titled Nature, Part of the Common Sentient Series, because Anna Marie gives different exercises, including how to work with the medicine wheel and the importance of creating your own symbolic library. Of course, in addition to just getting out there and being open without
Beautiful.
Expectations.
Great. Thank you, Paul. And thank you all for tuning in today. I want to leave you with the words from this book. Anna Marie writes, "When we remember our inherent connection with the life force energy that shows up in nature, we begin to subtly recalibrate to the refined frequencies that run through it. There's nothing more powerful than joining with this creative force that animates through not only us, but the trees, plants, soils, rocks, water, and air. With every breath we take, we involuntarily move this energy into our bodies and cells. It only makes sense to be aware of this and to collaborate with this life force." I'm Julie Kroll. You've been listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. This is the Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together, we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, I'm sending you a world of love. Bye for now. If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting the Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliekrollemail.com. Thanks for listening.